Opening the Senate Committee on Redistricting for today, March 4th, 2011.
And I'm opening the informational meeting for the House Redistricting Committee for the same date.
Welcome, everyone. Today we're having an informational meeting on two topics, the overview of the Oregon census data and also a continuation of our discussion about communities of interest. Before we begin, however, I just wanted to let people in the room and those watching and listening know that starting next Friday, we will be out in the communities to take testimony around the state. We begin next Friday, March 11th. We will be in Tillamook at the Tillamook Bay Community College from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., taking testimony there in Tillamook. Our staff has done an excellent job of organizing a very broad list of contacts, which we will be notifying county commissioners, mayors, ports, school districts, regional government, transit, higher education, local business, hospitals, and various organizations. They will be notified of the opportunity to come and testify. The following weekend, we will be in LaGrand, Burns, and Bend. That's on the 18th and 19th of March. In April, on April 1st, we will be in Medford. On April 2nd, Coos Bay. Friday, April 8th, we'll be in Beaverton and Portland. And on the 9th, we'll be in Gresham and Oregon City. On the 16th of April, we will be in Eugene and then Corvallis. So those are the trips that we have around the state. When we are in those dozen locations, we will have video conferencing set up for people in areas around those locations so that they can participate without driving into the place where we will be. We will also have additional hearings after that back here in Salem. All of that information and the schedule, the locations, and the times are now posted on the redistricting website, and I'm looking for an affirmative from the staff. Is that all on the website?
We will confirm that, Madam Chair.
My understanding, if it isn't, it will be right on the website so that you can get information about those field hearings and let your communities know. We will be also notifying the senators and representatives who are representing those areas so that they know in advance and can either participate there, or there will be a room here in the Capitol where those hearings will be shown, except for a couple of Saturday hearings. Otherwise, people can be here in the Capitol or at those hearings around the state. We, both committees, I know, believe it's very important to get input from the communities get their ideas about how these districts will be changing. So we'll begin our informational meeting with an overview of the census data, and we have Wayne Coffey, Charles Reinerson, and Jason Nikervich. If you all want to come up together, would that be all right?
Okay.
And do you have a plan about who's going to go first, whether it's the Population Research Center or Wayne who wants to go first, who has the most general presentation?
It's got your name on it.
Chair Bonamici, I think we'll start with the presentation of the how the districts break down, and then Charles and Jason can answer questions about the
Terrific.
Census.
Thank you so much. I know we'll have lots of questions. We've all been studying the census numbers and look forward to the presentation. Thank you very much.
Chair Bonamici, members of the committee, my name is Wayne Coffey. I'm the technical coordinator for redistricting. We're going to go through just really quickly some presentations on how the census data relates to the how each district is going to either population adjustments will need to be. So, Oregon's population count as of December 15th was 3,831,074. That's a 12% growth from the 2000 population count. That means for redistricting that this number is going to have to be divided by each district to come up with a new number. For Congress, it's 766,215. The Senate is 127,702, and for the House, 63,851. As reported by the census, the growth is not even, and we can see many of the eastern counties have either lost population or not grown at the rate of the rest of the state. With Deschutes County and some of the northwest counties being the exception with high growth rates. For our congressional districts, that breaks down to two districts that are overpopulated and two that are under. The District 1 has 36,355 persons over, so that's good. They're going to have to shed that many people to balance their district, and District 2 is also over by 3,772, and District 4 is going to have to gain 26,981 persons. For the Senate districts, the pattern is obviously going to be very similar with District 27 at about 27,000 persons over, so they're going to have to shed.
Whose district is that?
That's Senator Telfer's.
As well as District 17 is 17,311 over.
That would be mine.
With the House districts breaking down to a little bit smaller level, one pattern I'd like to point out here with District 28 here in the bottom, where it looks relatively balanced. However, within that district, there's a bit of a disparity. So, and that's similar in other cases throughout the state. I want to go through here and kind of break down the districts a little bit for get a better idea of how they're going to have to work with each other to balance the population. So for Eastern Oregon, the districts here and here will can be compensated largely by the districts further to the east, while in the Portland area, the districts in the inner portion of Portland have a deficit that can be met largely by the surrounding districts. In total, the center city districts here are about 33,000 below. It's a deficit of about 33,000, while the over the surplus in the surrounding districts is about 44,000. So that still leaves a considerable amount of population to redistribute. Okay. If we move to the districts in the Mid-Valley, some of these can be balanced within each other. Districts 15 and 16, districts 20 and 19 can compensate with 22 and 21, but there's not enough population within these general areas to compensate for there as well. And the situation in southwestern Oregon is much more severe in that almost all the districts are below their needed population to balance out. So what that means is if we were to take those four areas and aggregate them together, we get something similar to what the congressional districts look like. And you can see that the southwestern districts need to gain about 20,000 people, the Mid-Valley about 8,000, while the eastern districts and the North Valley and North Coast regions in total are about 28,000 surplus. So the district's direction is going to have to move north and slightly east in order to make that compensation work. These are just the numbers of all the districts that are either over or under 5% of what they need to gain or lose. And I do have some more tables of just the city and county populations as of 2010, but I could stop here really quick to answer any questions about the districts.
I think if you just want to leave that up for a minute, many of us have seen those numbers and have been studying those numbers, but I think those in the audience might like to look at those. And those are pretty much regional, are they? The districts, for example, in the Senate districts, if you talk about the regions where they're significantly over and significantly under, that's still the Deschutes County and Washington County primarily?
That's correct, Chair.
Can you go back to the previous slide?
I should point out that when I did this, it was intended just to get an idea to visualize the numbers better. There's no intention of necessarily keeping these districts intact in this way. And in this case, while I grabbed them by House districts, they're all together by Senate as well, except for Senate District 13 would straddle this line here. I just thought it.
That's tough.
And just to make it clear, this is not a proposal or anything. We had a misunderstanding earlier on about a slide that was shown. This is to show regional population deviations only. It's not a proposal for any map.
Existing map. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, I can't remember. Is this... Well, yesterday in the press conference, we were asked if these numbers were available anywhere. I'm just trying to recall whether these are on the redistricting committee website. Yeah.
Chair Bonamici, Representative Lindsay. These numbers, there is a map that's going to be available on the website. It should be posted today. I think we're just maybe working out a few bugs, but it should be available very soon.
Right.
I see an affirmative in the back from one of our committee staff that these numbers will be available on or are available on the legislative website now, all updated with the new census numbers. Any other questions before we move on?
So just really quickly we can go through. I've ranked some of the counties and cities based on the 2010 census, and this is just ranked by the number of people added to each county. So probably not too terribly surprising, Washington, Multnomah, Deschutes, Clackamas, and down added the most population. And then to rank them by growth, slightly different, Polk County and some of the other smaller counties that added a lot of growth, but not necessarily a lot of persons relative to the other county growth. And then I've ranked the top 20 cities by growth and by percentage of growth here. So to go back to the persons added, Portland, Bend, Hillsboro, down to Central Point. And we have all this, we can have all this data available and a total list.
Any questions?
And with that, we can turn it over to Charles and Jason.
Thank you so much. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Bonamici. Co-Chair Lindsay and members of the committee. We're here mostly just to answer questions, if any, that you might have about the census, how it's conducted, what the questions are like. I thought, though, it might be important in my analysis of how people answer the questions. I think the most instructive thing to do is to look at how the questionnaire is written. And
before you continue, can you please state your name?
Sorry. Charles Reinerson, Population Research
Thank
Center,
you.
Portland State University.
Jason Jurgovich, Population Research Center, Portland State University.
And you were talking about how the question
right,
questionnaire
how,
was...
So I sent your staff a copy of, informational copy of the questionnaire, and... Wayne let us know that there's interest in how the race and ethnicity questions are reported and as it relates to communities of interest. I just wanted to point out that there are two questions. Question number 8 is asked first after some other basic questions. Question number 8 is this person of Hispanic, Latino, or Spanish origin? And so you get to say no or yes, and if yes, there's several categories. And then the next question is, what is this person's race? And there are 6 broad categories that were reported in the redistricting data that you've received now. And those Asian and Pacific Islander categories are rolled up into broader categories in the data you have. Later this summer, there'll be more detail. But the main point here is that there's 2 questions. So you can be Hispanic, Latino, and then you can choose any race. And this is a little different than the way the question used to be worded in the 1980 and 1990 censuses. Both of those, the questionnaire they had 2 questions, but they asked the race question first. And then there were a couple other questions about how old you are. And then they asked if you are Hispanic or Latino a few questions later. So between 1990 and Well, what that did is that prompted a lot of people to put down Hispanic in the race, you know, as in the other category for race, because they were thinking of themselves first as Hispanic. And so there was a huge other category in the 80 and 90 censuses. And so by putting the Hispanic question first, you know, people have been able to answer that, and then they can choose any race. And it minimized the other race category, and that other category has been shrinking subsequently. And the final thing I want to point out is the way that it's reported, race, you may see numbers for one race, and then you'll see sometimes numbers for race alone or in combination. Because beginning in the 2000 census, you could choose more than one race. There are figures for reported both ways, and it's not so easily extracted from the data that you've got. You have to add up all the categories because there's 63 combinations of those six race categories. So, but it's become a growing part of our population, the category of two or more races. So if you want the number to add up to the population total, you have to use those race alone categories, say people who only said white, people who only said Asian, and then that final category, two or more races, which is now 3.8% of Oregon's population. It's up to about 144,000 from closer to 100,000 10 years ago. So that category is growing, and among particular races, you know, a large share of people who identify with one race also identify with another race. If you look at the black or African American alone population in the 2010 census in Oregon, it's about 69,000. That's close to 2%. But if you look at those who said black or African American either alone or with something else, 98,000. So 30% of Oregon's African American population also included another race on their form. 24% of Oregon's Asian population also chose another race. So just wanted to make sure that's something that the committee is aware of when you're looking at communities of interest.
Thank you. And I'll start out by asking, based on the new census information, do you have ideas about where there may be minority communities of interest that have changed since the last decade?
Well, the population is more integrated than it once was, so that the communities of interest have generally dispersed, you know, not as concentrated as they once were, particular ethnic communities. You know, most of the growth in the Asian population is in the Portland metro area, as well as the African American population, but much more suburban than it once was. You know, once 30 years ago, a large majority of African Americans lived in the city of Portland, you know, particularly in North and Northeast Portland. But I wish I had the figures in front of me, but you know, much smaller share of African American population lives even within the Portland city limits than it once did. Certainly, you know, fewer within a concentrated area in North and Northeast Portland. The Latino growth, you know, is really spread statewide. There are places where there's more Latino growth than other places, but you know, it's hard to generalize.
Ready for questions. Vice Chair or Co-Chair Lindsay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I never know. Well, actually, I always get my name right in these things, and the sex, I get that as well. But the rest, when we go down the list, I have so many blood streams going through me, I don't know what I am. But my first question is where would a Mideasterner and a Brazilian, where they generally put theirs? That's the only place that I don't see something for. Do you know that?
Well, Chair Bonamici, Co-Chair Lindsay, that's That's a good question, and it really points to the fact that this data is self-reported. You know, there's nobody looking at you to decide what race to put down on the form. And there are differences probably in the way that people, you know, the same person with the same heredity may put down two different categories on the form. I've known a Brazilian who was confused about it because she didn't consider herself Hispanic, Latino maybe, and Middle Easterners. There's some detail in here in the guide on page 27. I don't know. Hope you got the. I don't know if you got this reference book, but it says Near Easterner. It should be white. But, you know, at what point is that boundary? So it's really self-identification and how people feel. And people, another thing with the multi-race category is the increase, you know, part of it is because more children are more than one race and that population has grown. But also I believe there's a growing acceptance that you can choose more than one race because that's not the Census Bureau's definition. That's the federal government's Office of Management and Budget. You know, they made that decision in 1997 of how race and Hispanic ethnicity are meant to be reported on every federal form. So it's taken a long time for the Department of Education and other agencies and the health departments, you know, to come around to that standard. But they've pretty much all come around to it now, so I think people are more aware of the fact that you can choose more than one race.
And my next question is, I remember back in the 2000 census that there was a big debate on whether we should go to polling versus actual hard counts. And we're talking about zero deviation among these districts, or very close to zero deviation. What is how accurate are these numbers that Wayne just gave? And what sort of deviation is there in those numbers?
I'm going to take this one.
Chair Bonamici, Representative Lindsay, let me ask you the deviation in terms of if there's an undercount with respect to the census population. Is that what your question is referring to? Or?
Yeah, I'm wondering how accurate the census count is. I mean, is it truly 100%? Did every single Oregonian fill one of these out, or is there a poll more accurate versus actual hard count?
What we find is that in terms of actual enumeration with respect to census counts, historically there has been significant undercounts of population, specifically minority population. 1980, 1990, significant undercounts of the black population throughout the U.S. Those counts have improved. Specifically, the census has released a special report on undercounts with 2000 and 2010 data that shows less of an undercount with respect to minority populations. But as you can imagine, there are other hard-to-reach populations across not only the state but across the country, and specific municipalities do a better job of counting those people. So homeless populations, for example, and ensuring that you're counting those folks in the census. Probably a little bit outside of your question, but there's a significant debate in terms of how to most accurately account for population, whether we should continue to use the actual enumeration of the census or statistical sampling through survey method, which then becomes an issue of constitutionality.
We have another decade to figure that out because we can't change it for this cycle anyway, but it's a good question. Co-chair Garrett.
So the follow-up then is we're not going to get any more reliable numbers than we now have, right? This is as good as it gets.
Correct.
Thanks.
These are our numbers. Any questions? Further questions about the population? No? Thank you very much for being here. We really appreciate it. And as we study the data, we hope that you'll be available, maybe not to come back to Salem again. We appreciate your coming back this time, but to respond to our questions as we start delving into the details. So thank you again for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are moving on to our continuation on communities of interest. And we're going to start with, is Bernie here, Bernie Bottomley? Start with Bernie Bottomley, and I think we'll do a couple of panels here. If we want to bring is Dennis Creel here as well? and Dave Glennie. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Bonamici, Co-Chair Lindsay, Bernie Bottomley with the Portland Business Alliance. We're the Chamber of Commerce of the Greater Metropolitan Portland area. We have about 1,400 small, medium, and large members representing about 325,000 employees in the metro area. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today. First of all, congratulations on drawing what may be the most thankless committee assignment in the Capitol. I was looking over a Portland City Club report that notes that this is the 100th anniversary of the last time the legislature enacted a redistricting plan that actually went into effect. And by comparison, the Boston Red Sox seemingly perpetual curse of the Bambino only lasted 86 years. So hope springs eternal, and perhaps this committee is the legislative equivalent of the 2004 Red Sox with Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz, and you'll hit one out of the park. As you know, ORS 188-010 directs, among other things, that redistricting not divide communities of common interest. I'd like to provide our perspective on the communities of common interest in the Portland metro area, particularly related to economic areas of interest. Generally speaking, we believe that there are strong differences in the economic communities of interest between the three counties in the metro area, in particular between Multnomah County and the other two counties. Let me give you a couple of illustrations of these differences. An analysis of Bureau of Labor Statistics from 2009 indicates that there are significant differences between the scale and composition of the economies of Multnomah County and the other two counties. First of all, the sheer scale of Multnomah County is unlike the other two, accounting for over 50% of all jobs in the region. Multnomah County also has a significant concentration of jobs in specific economic disciplines. For example, the county accounts for half of the state total for jobs in the category of management of companies. By contrast, Clackamas and Washington counties combined account for only 16% of the state total in this category. Multnomah County also has a concentration of jobs in the leisure and hospitality industry, comprising 58% of the region's total employment in this discipline. Likewise, the county hosts more than half the region's professional and business services jobs. And finally, the county has more than a quarter of all public sector jobs in the state, fully 64% of the public employment in the region. Together, Washington and Clackamas counties account for only 15% of the state's total public sector employment. These differing economic characteristics lead to different communities of common interest. One need look no farther than the composition of local government budgets to see how these different economic characteristics translate into distinct policy differences. For example, Multnomah County and the City of Portland levy a business income tax. Neither of the other two counties or any of the cities in those counties levy a tax, anything like that. Secondly, the budget of Multnomah County and the City of Portland have significant allocations to addressing traditionally urban issues such as low-income housing, public transportation, and social services. By comparison, the budgets of the two suburban counties and their cities have much greater emphasis on areas such as land development, extension of utilities into undeveloped areas, and road construction. These differences in economic profile and emphasis suggest that the redrawing of district legislative boundaries should, to the degree possible, consistent with the other requirements of ORS 188-010, create districts that recognize the distinctly different nature of Multnomah County as opposed to Clackamas and Washington counties. Thank you for the opportunity to share these thoughts with you today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Representative Garrett.
Thank you. Thanks, Bernie. It's very interesting. I wonder if you could comment a little bit on just the sheer growth we've seen in Washington County, in particular, parts of Clackamas County. We're talking now, I mean, these counties have so much diversity within them that I wonder if, I mean, you've made a general statement about the differences between Multnomah versus the other two. Can you say a little bit about what's going on within each of the counties in terms of different communities of interest?
Well, I think in terms of economic communities of interest, I mean, the question was raised earlier by the chair about have you seen migrations in minority populations? This is the third time I've looked at redistricting, and in 1991, when we looked at it, the half of the African American population of the state lived in four census tracts in Northeast Portland, and now, you know, it's completely different than that, as was mentioned. In terms of economic communities of interest, I think that Multnomah County has stayed pretty stable. Mm-hmm. There's certainly been, you know, changes within the county, but overall the composition of the economy has stayed relatively stable. I think what you're seeing in Washington County in particular, with both the population and employment growth there, is a reinforcing and a concentration of some of the developments that we saw in the 20 years before that in the electronics industry and the high-tech industry. And from an economic standpoint, relatively speaking, a decline in the importance of the agricultural community. I mean, it's still a significant, I don't want to be taken out of context, it's still a very important part of the economy there, but relative to the total size of the economy in Washington County, it's much smaller than it was 30 years ago when I looked at this the last time. So, in Clackamas County, I think you're seeing the beginnings of that, but you're not seeing it to the extent that you are in Washington County.
I wanted to ask a question. You stated in your testimony something about recognizing the distinctly different nature of Multnomah County from Clackamas and Washington. And as somebody who represents a district that's in both Multnomah County and Washington County, I guess I want to push back just a little bit and talk about some of the differences. Because, for example, in parts of the northeast corner of Washington County in Beaverton, where it's close to Multnomah County, where you have a pretty urban suburban area, is much more aligned with the Multnomah County than it is with rural Washington County. So I guess I want to sort of ask you if there are areas where there are parts of the counties that are more similar to Multnomah County than the outskirts or other parts of, for example, Washington County or Clackamas.
Sure. I mean, I think you can look at there are areas of similarity if you look at different sections of the economy. If you look at retail, for example, there's not a concentration necessarily of retail in one county versus the other. So there's going to be similarities because they're all urban counties. They all share, one transit district and so forth. But I think there are significant differences that are called out when you look at the numbers from a countywide perspective.
Thank you. Questions? All right. We will hear from, are you Mr. Glennie?
Dennis Creel.
Oh, you're Dennis Creel. And Mr. Glennie, is Mr. Glennie here yet? No. Okay, we'll hear from Dennis Creel. Welcome.
Thank you. Senator Bonamici, Chair, Co-Chairs Lindsay and Garrett. I'm Dennis Creel, Timberland Manager for Hampton Resources. Hampton Resources is a family-owned forest products company headquartered in Portland, Oregon. The company owns nearly 95,000 acres of timberland in northwest Oregon and southwest Washington. It has world-class lumber mills in Willamina and Tillamook and has recently acquired a mill in Warrenton, which will start up soon. This is my 37th year with Hampton as a forester managing their timberlands. I have been on the Willamina School Board and chair of the Yamhill County Planning Commission. One of the criteria for redistricting legislative and congressional districts is to not divide communities of common interest. Our Oregon mills currently employ over 500 employees, along with another 500 contractor employees that work in the woods. The Willamina and Tillamook mills are among the most productive mills in North America. Most of these employees live in the rural areas near the mill or in the larger towns nearby. They enjoy a rural economy. Many have farm or forest lands of their own. They enjoy hunting, fishing, and hiking in the nearby woods. They have close community ties and have common rural issues. Their water comes from nearby springs, wells, or if in town, local water systems that source their water from nearby hills. They have septic tanks and have issues associated with their use. They access cities and towns via county and state highways. PGE, Pacific Corp, and PUDs are the various utilities that provide electricity to these mills and communities, each with their associated cost structure and rules. The people living there are very self-reliant. They enjoy the big cities of Salem and Portland, but they don't want to live there. Mm-hmm. They also don't like city folks telling them what to do. They fiercely defend their harvesting of timber and the making of forest products as a valuable contribution to our society, creating wealth to our regional economy. You will also find many world-class artists living in these communities. They are a community of common interest and want to be represented at all levels of government, but often find themselves disenfranchised due to the boundary lines, which tend to include population centers linked with rural areas. So if you look at your map, the first map that I showed, that I have there attached, you can see that in the center there is Wilhelmina, and off to the right is Sheridan, and Grand Ronde is off to the left. We have our Wilhelmina lumber facility right there next to Wilhelmina. These blue lines, they are the district, congressional district, or the House district boundaries. And you can see they all come together there in the northwest corner of Wilhelmina. Wilhelmina and Sheridan proper are in House District 23. But this map is a pretty good-sized geographical area. And there's a lot of people that live in this blue area right here that surround the cities of Sheridan, Wilhelmina, and Grand Ronde, more so than live in actually the town proper. And they're all part of this community, and they all work. And and they don't all work at the mill or out in the woods, but they have farming. There's forestry. There's some of these people work in town in Salem and other places as well. But this is a fairly close-knit community and shouldn't be divided. But you can see House District 24 takes some of these folks. The Wilhelmina and Sheridan, they go south. And House District 10, it goes all the way down to Lincoln City. And well, I didn't say this in my testimony, but HD 23 and 24 make up a Senate district. So right there in this community, you got two different Senate districts. And in a rural area, I think it's very important that you think about trying to keep these people in the same group and represented with the same people, because they don't have much of a say. I think not much thought was given to this community of fine people. It feels like the armpit of the three districts. I lived in Grand Ronde near Wilhelmina, in Sheridan, and outside Sheridan in a period of 10 years. I would have been represented by all three districts at this current configuration had it been in place when I lived there. These lines divide communities of common interest. I would have combined these communities and put the western boundary at the crest of the Coast Range west of Grand Ronde. See map 2. I went and hand-draw the crest of the Coast Range there. This is a geographic boundary, which is a potential criterion within the law. Coastal communities would be represented as communities of common interest, separate from the timber agricultural communities found in the West Valley of Wilhelmina, Grand Ronde, and Sheridan. I would also combine Amity and Perrydale and put them in a more rural configuration to the south with Dallas. On this note, an argument could be made, however, to use political boundaries, another criterion in the law. Notice on map 1 again, I drew in where the Yamhill-Polk County line is. And actually, the Lincoln County line is not on this map, but it basically separates along the crest of the Coast Range. But you'll see that the town of Wilhelmina is actually split by the two counties. The local people are used to this division. Their respective counties do a good job of taking care of both sides of the line with regard to county planning, law enforcement, and other community services. However, I would prefer the Wilhelmina, Sheridan, Grand Ronde community stay intact. I'm going to take this moment to emphasize something that I think is extremely important. True wealth is created when raw material is made into a finished product. Our forests around Oregon contain vast amounts of potential wealth for this state. The mills that are there are the key that unlocks this vast amount of wealth. They convert raw material, which are logs, to finished products, lumber, and ship them throughout the world. The byproducts, such as bark chips and sawdust, produce energy or sold to other local mills that produce paper products that are also sent throughout the world. This is a very basic way wealth is created, and Oregon can do it better than anyone in the world. In our case, the Willamina, Tillamook, and Warrenton mills are strategically located close to the raw material supply, which is the coastal forest of northwest Oregon and southwest Washington. This is a vast area of highly productive and sustainably managed timberland. But you have to have that key, which is the mill, that unlocks the wealth. You also need quality people to run the mill. The same goes for the loggers and truckers who bring the raw material to the mill. These folks surround themselves with a community of common interest. The trees in the woods don't vote. Communities do. Is this potential wealth represented properly in our state governmental institutions? I think that's a big question. I cannot overemphasize how important these communities are to this state. Now take a look at map 3. Notice, this is up there in Astoria, is in HD 31, and Astoria, that particular house district, goes right along the Columbia River down to Scappoose. And right across Young's Bay, you have House District 32. And if you look closely, you'll see that the Astoria Airport is in one district and the town proper is in the other district. Astoria and Warrenton are very much a community of common interest. Warrenton has lots of big box stores, and Astoria is a tourist destination. People live and work in both areas. Astoria should be in the same district as these coastal towns. Now look at map number 4. Notice, I drew the crest of the Coast Range again. Notice that HD 32 goes east over the Coast Range and into the valley and includes Banks. This just doesn't make sense. Banks is not a community of common interest with Seaside. Again, use county lines or divide at the crest of the Coast Range. I strongly recommend that you draw districts that are geographically compact and contiguous rather than something like a Picasso, see map number 5. Compact districts allow better representation by placing citizens who live nearby and share similar lifestyles into their own districts. Rural areas may be larger in size, but you can make them compact by limiting the length so you don't end up with fingers such as HD 22, which I have as map number 6. In fact, just to digress slightly, this particular one's got, you know, Northeast Salem on one side, and it goes up along the freeway. It's fairly narrow. It's about 1,000 feet wide in one place. And right to the left of it is another congressional district that's bound by this one and the river that includes Kaiser, Newburg. And then you've got Donald, which is a rural area in the middle. It just makes more sense to me, instead of having these fingers coming out, to just squash it so you're more equal in size, take in your rural areas, and let the cities of Newburg go with their community and the Salem area go with theirs. So finally, we should never define communities of common interest based on the relationship between a community and any particular political party or incumbent or potential future candidate. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your thoughtful testimony. Do we have any questions? Any questions at all? And I just want to point out with regard to your last bullet point that the Oregon law agrees with you on that. Thank you for your testimony. Is Dave Glennie here? He's on. All right. Thank you. He'll be here at 11:30. Okay. So is George Puentes here?
No.
He's not here. Okay. Jeff Stone, I know you're here. And John Zielinski?
Yeah.
Welcome. Come on up together. Welcome to the committee. Have you decided who's going first?
Want to go?
Sure.
Sure, why not?
Mr. Zielinski, you going to go first?
Sure.
I hope I pronounced your name correctly.
Yes, you did. Thank you. Well, good morning, representatives and senators. My name is John Zielinski, and I farm in a rural area just northeast of Salem. The task of redistricting that you as elected representatives have will give you the opportunity to show your ability to work together in this unique session where power is split so evenly. As I'm sure that you are aware, in the past 50 years, no Oregon legislature has been able to achieve this task of redistricting. It is the clear intent of ORS 188-010 that the legislature performs the task of redistricting, not the Secretary of State, not the courts. Yet every opportunity in the past 50 years that this body has had to achieve this goal has been squandered. Each time it has gone to the Secretary of State, and in some years, courts. I encourage you to show the people of Oregon that in this unique session, in these trying economic times, that Oregonians can work together to achieve a common goal. That goal is for you to create districts that are not formed out of political motivation, no, rather districts that represent the citizens through geographic and economic common ground. Of course, the districts need to be of equal population and utilize existing geographic boundaries and use some of the infrastructure, such as transportation links, in a common sense manner. I am a farmer, and my farm is at the edge of the rural-urban interface. It is important that you try to draw the district lines to group people by their common interest. Bumping an urban or suburban district into a rural area to make certain that the urban district has enough people does little to reflect the interest of those living in the rural area of the district. They are simply outnumbered and therefore not represented. Those of us who live outside the cities and towns of Oregon have different interests than our urban neighbors. Those who live rurally generally have common interest in the land and resources that they generate their livelihood from. They have natural resource-based economic ties. Though everyone who lives rurally is not always tied to the land for their income, they are tied to the geographic area by a common interest of stewardship for the land. To use my own farm as an example, I have much more in common interest with the farmers and folks that live to the east, away from the housing developments, issues such as water rights, UGB issues, labor issues, and the Right to Farm Act. If an issue were to come up that might impact my farm, I would rather have an elected official from among my rural neighbors than from someone living in an urban or suburban environment. Long story short, if the districts of each town and city bump out into the rural areas, the voice of those living in the rural areas is muted. I ask you fine people, as you sit down with map and pencil to draw lines upon it, to think about keeping communities of common interest together, to work in a bipartisan manner that will represent the interest of the people of Oregon, not the political parties of Oregon. Please don't let the political infighting that has taken place for the last 50 years continue. Eliminate rural people in Washington County being lumped in with the urban people of Northwest Portland. Eliminate the line that cuts a town like John Day in half. Let them be represented as a community. Eliminate the lines that draw a narrow finger of area that runs from Woodburn to Northeast Salem. You have the ability. Now show the citizens of Oregon that you can work together and achieve redistricting as it is intended in ORS 188-010. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we'll hear from Mr. Stone if you want to stay there in case anybody has any questions after guest testimony. Welcome.
Good morning, Chairwoman Bonamici, co-chairs Lindsay and Garrett. Jeff Stone, for the record, I'm the executive director for the Oregon Association of Nurseries, and I don't envy you the task that is before you. Of course, you've heard from our good friend here from Easy Orchards about the citation of the law and how things need to be contiguous and equal population. I would also say that fairness, frankly, is in the eye of the beholder. And so you have a great task in front of you. Although I want to talk to you a little bit today about something a little different, about the economic ties that bind a district and bind a community. And I'll be focusing on that. And you have my written testimony that you can refer to with greater detail. We are unique, the nursery and greenhouse industry, because we're both urban and rural. And so when we look at redistricting, we look at it in terms of a community of interest. And since we're a traded sector, a natural cluster, if you will, we dominate in the Willamette Valley predominantly. While the 1,800 nursery and greenhouse businesses, they operate as competitors, as friends, as collaborators, and as neighbors, and the diversity is staggering. You can have a multi-genera container operation writing down from a mom-and-pop native plant grower. And so there's a variety of examples I provided in my testimony about how that kind of sections out. How I'd like to break it down for you today is breaking the industry into two basic sectors, really sales in size versus location. Out of the 1,800 member greenhouse businesses, 1,300 are small, and that means that they sell less than $100,000 in sales every year. If for plants, that's not very many, and so I want to try to articulate that a lot of them are small. Only 240 sell over $500,000 and up to the big nurseries that you see in many of your districts. Many of your districts, when I looked at the makeup of this committee, save three, are in the top five grossing nursery districts. So in order to get that on the record, it's Marion, this is in order of sales, Marion, Clackamas, Washington, Yamhill, and people are surprised by Multnomah. So that accounts for the $744 million of annual sales for the nursery industry. In terms of location, we believe that county lines are pretty crude measures of how a community should be organized. For us, in terms of where our operations reside, it's Clackamas, Marion, Washington, Multnomah, and Representative Holdy and Senator Beyer, Lane County. So that... those are areas where we congregate. And since we don't have very many east of the Cascades, that's predominantly due to, as Easy Orchards would say, is due to irrigated lands. So if there were more irrigated lands, I think east of the mountains, you would have more nursery operations. We need to be close to transportation interchanges to get product to market. So you have in my testimony here about how a community of interest should and can be organized. It needs to have economic ties. It needs to take into account the geographic diversity and the sense of community that economic entities like the nursery and greenhouse industry have. And lastly, you have an opportunity to make an imprint on something that will achieve a lot of impact and also a lot of scrutiny. But we have the faith that you will be able to do that, and we stand ready to help you. So I'll leave the remainder of my remarks into the written record, and thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you so much. Questions for these gentlemen? Anybody have any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
We were that good.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
You're off the hook for now. I'll try again. Is Mr. Glennie here now? Dave Glennie? I think we're going to stand in recess for just a couple of minutes because we are expecting Mr. Glennie at 11:30. Unless, Sean Jillians, are you interested in weighing in today? No? Nope. All right. We'll recess for about 3 or 4 minutes and see if he arrives. Committee.
Thank you very much, Senator. By way of introduction, first I'd like to apologize for the late arrival. I had other commitments this morning, and
no worries,
I've done
we're glad
the best
you're here.
I can. Secondly, I would like to inform the committee that I'm far from an expert on this particular topic, so I'm prone to just saying what I think and letting other people judge whether or not it has any merit.
And if you'll please state your name for the
yes,
record.
Yes, my name is David Glennie. I'm a Salem resident. Born and bred here. I have a development business named Telos Development Company, which has worked in the state for the last 20 years or so, and we've invested about $50 million primarily in rural Oregon, east of the county, east of the mountains, and focusing on affordable housing projects. I was also a member of Salem City Council in the late 90s, and am currently a member of the state's Private Activity Bond Committee, which, as you may know, distributes bond proceeds or advocates bond proceeds. So I've got a rather extensive history in development in rural Oregon. We have also lately developed in the state, but with regard to areas of community interest, I've read some notes and would like to emphasize that in my representative, in my domain, the people that I work with in these rural counties are prone to common interests that are economic, and that certainly the rural urban split is very evident east of the mountains, as you know, and that with regard to redistricting, I'm sure the comment would be that use common sense rather than gerrymandering. It's simply areas of economic interest prevail in this state. As you know, the state is not doing well, and currently there's a lot of people distressed about the Portland issue versus the rest of the state with regard to setting policy. I would welcome questions if anyone is interested.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Glennie? Anybody? Well, we appreciate your. Do you have any questions? We appreciate your coming here today, and look forward to an ongoing conversation as we move through the process.
Thank you very much. Once again, my apologies for the late arrival.
It's all right. Thank you very much. Hey, we do have some time left. If there's anyone else who would like to make a few comments. If not, I will adjourn the Senate Committee on Redistricting for today.
Adjourn the House Redistricting Committee.